So the idea of the flock project is to have an integrative or a holistic approach. So this means that we're not focused only on technology. This is not like a magical thing where, you know, if you put the right technology in the country, suddenly things will go well. It's a bit more complicated. So we divided our research in five areas. And if you see them together, it's a pretty full picture of social life and all the things that need to work together. For example, I'll give you an example how it doesn't work. You think, okay, students should have computers. And then you damn them all in one class, and it's one teacher controls the key. And you look a few years back after, and nobody's really using them, right? Because they didn't think about the training of the teachers. They didn't think about the training of the students. They just thought, put some machines there, and education will change. And that doesn't work. So this is a bit kind of like our philosophy as well. So the first stream is human capabilities. So how do we train students, teachers, citizens, public officials to be able to use these new technologies and collaborative ways of cooperation? The second stream is called changing the productive matrix. And here I want to give you an example because it's very important. So if you are a small farmer, indigenous farmers in Ecuador and in many other countries, the agribusiness industry is not making machines for you. They're making machines for big farms. So if you want to play that game, you have to become big yourself, right? And so they actually destroy the fabric, the social fabric of small farmers and indigenous farmers that exist. And this is not always a good thing. It's most of the time it's a pejorative development. So what's the solution? Well, one of the solutions could be to have a global open design community that makes open agricultural machines that are designed for small farmers. A lot of machines can be done without energy, you know, like extensions of the arm. And so there are all kinds of initiatives today already existing in France, in the United States, in Canada, probably also in Latin America, that are already doing this, right? So why not create this connection between these communities of scientists, farmers from abroad, citizen scientists, and on the other hand, local communities, and see what they need, what is the basic technology they would need to make their kind of agriculture better, right? Their small, family-based eco-agriculture rather than big, toxic agribusiness, right? So this is, I don't know if this would work, but this is one of the, at the very least, Ecuador should have an experimental station, you know, where you can do open technology assessment, look at those machines, look at which are the good ones. That would be like the top-down approach from abroad to Ecuador, but then opposite is looking at what are the needs, what do they need, what do they want, and then see whether, you know, these kind of things already exist in some other community elsewhere in the world, right? This kind of connection is part of our project. I'd like to give another example from the human capabilities stream. And this is also something that my colleague who is sitting next to me, Jenny Torres, who is our Ecuadorian researcher. It's about scientific laboratories. There is a book, it's called Open Source Lab. It's by Joshua Pierce, an American professor from the Michigan Open Sustainability Lab. I think that's the right name. And scientific instruments are very expensive. You're talking, for example, I don't know, maybe $4,000 for a microscope. So these are very expensive machines. What people don't know is that for 90% of these machines, there are already open hardware alternatives. And these open scientific instruments are generally 1/8 of the price of the proprietary intellectual property-based scientific instruments. So imagine that Ecuador would do a systematic review of these scientific instruments and look at the alternatives. So you can do two things. One is you can save 90% of your budget, right, by systematically implementing open scientific instruments in public universities, for example. Or, which I think, of course, is a much better solution, you can say, well, 9 times more students will have access to these open source laboratories. So this would create an enormous increase in the scientific literacy of the Ecuadorian students, right? So you see that this has real life effects And that we can actually calculate those things and have, you know, economic models that show that it's a good thing to do these shifts. Okay, so these were the two first streams. So the next three streams are institutional innovation. And this is about, for example, how can co-ops and the solidarity economy have the right legal instruments to start using these new methods? Or what are the kind of licenses, for example, that can protect traditional knowledge from biopiracy? So this is legal, institutional, etc. The fourth stream is called open technical infrastructure. This is really about the internet itself, right? As you know, everything we say and do is being monitored and surveilled by the NSA. So is this really something that a country like Ecuador wants? Does it want to be spied upon like that? So why not work on technological sovereignty? Can we have a kind of internet that doesn't allow this to happen, that protects privacy and digital rights of the users? I think we are the fifth and last stream, and this is called Commons for Collective Life. And this is more about everything else, basically. So this is quite a big area. But you know, I give you an example. This is a European example. In Europe, we have, I think, 6 million homeless people, and we have 12 million open, empty houses, right? So there's actually two houses potentially that could be used by the homeless people. The reason it's not used is because housing has become speculative. You invest in a house not to live in it, but to resell it at a higher price, just as you would invest in a factory or anything else. So there are commons-oriented solutions that can take housing outside of the speculative market and keep it at a reasonable price so that people can actually afford housing and pay much less in rent, right? So this is not really knowledge purely, but it's connected because, for example, you have to know where are the empty houses, right? And this could be open knowledge. There is a project in Barcelona called Casas Tristes. I think they came to the conclusion that 40% of the houses in Barcelona were not used. And young people cannot afford the rent. I'm sure this is you have similar problems here in Ecuador, right? So this is, we will be looking at open food networks, housing, and whether we can have these kind of new types of licensing and property arrangements that can take these vital needs outside of the speculative market.